Morant with a running start. Elevates. Oh, it dunks. Oh, my goodness. Jonathan. Tie game in overtime. Gasol will turn his heat. It's good. Memphis on top. 17.
Finally now a three.
Count it.
A 15-point lead for Memphis. And Blake Griffin gets into it on the floor with Randolph. Hard to tell if there are any punches being thrown under there, but Griffin took exception to something. The officials break it up quickly.
Griffin. See, he just locked his arm and then kind of pulled him over. Zach falls down, and then, you know what, a little elbow there.
Oh, he's digging the elbow in.
Yeah, you know.
Welcome to Grits and Grinds, a Memphis Grizzlies podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. My name is Keith Parrish. The Grizzlies' winning streak came to a crashing halt over the weekend. First, there was a crushing defeat to the New York Knicks, where the Grizzlies blew multiple leads. They were up 13 points midway through the fourth quarter. When the starters all came back in, three of the starters were already on the court, but then when Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks joined them with 6 minutes and 40 seconds on the clock in the fourth quarter, they proceeded to lose the lead. They made numerous mental errors, missed a lot of free throws. They fouled a lot of shooters. Gave up a lot of free throws, and then it all came down to Ja Morant basically missing a layup. I mean, it was a six-footer, seven-footer. We'll call it a floater at the buzzer. Then they lose in overtime, and that felt like, oh, they just, you know, they let it slip away. They almost had the perfect road trip. They've been playing so well together, and they forgot to finish the job, and they were playing a team they were ahead of in the standings. Probably similar talent-wise. Knicks are having a pretty decent year behind Julius Randle and RJ Barrett's kind of coming out party. But they let that one slip away, and the Knicks, who had been struggling, suddenly pick up a win. The Grizzlies, who had been playing well, let one get away. And then on Sunday, the Grizzlies come out flat or with no defense whatsoever, and the Pacers run all over them, and the Grizzlies fight back, and almost do what the New York Knicks did to them, but fail. Much like the Knicks should not have been able to overcome whatever that 8-point deficit in the final couple minutes. In this, the Pacers held off the Grizzlies. A little bit of bad luck, a huge shot from Malcolm Brogdon to put him up six after the Grizzlies had cut it to three. And then the Grizzlies got it back down to three. And after a timeout, Ja Morant slips and falls. Not an exciting or great way to make your last stand, to have your star point guard just fall over, give up an uncontested layup. And so the Grizzlies now have lost two games in a row. Both games to teams with worse records than them. Although, again, similar talent-wise, I think the Knicks and the Pacers and the Grizzlies are all in the same tier of NBA teams. But not the results we were looking for or hoping for. On Friday's episode, I was spelling out how these games are super important because these are the winnable, gettable games. I mean, the Grizzlies can probably beat most anyone on any given night, especially in this specific season that's very, very odd and very, very strange. And you frequently will come across a team that is resting a lot of its good players. So you'll be able to pick up wins when maybe you look at the schedule and you don't think you're expected to win. But this little stretch of games against the Knicks and the Pacers and then the Bulls, you're like, let's get some of these. These are some games we need to pick up. And now you drop the first two, and you're left with the second game of a back-to-back against the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls will also be on the second game of a back-to-back. The Bulls just lost on Sunday as well in a game they did not want to lose to the Minnesota Timberwolves. So the Bulls, who are chasing that play-in spot or trying to maintain their grip on the play-in spot. And, you know, they had designs on climbing a little higher, I think, when they traded for Nick Vucevic. But they find themselves three games behind the Pacers, who've suddenly won three games in a row. And then the Grizzlies, you know, they had, as of just a couple days ago, we were like, oh, this is great. Five games up on the Pelicans. Not anymore. Just three games up on the Pelicans, two games up on the Warriors, one game up on the Spurs. Let's talk a little bit more about the details of these games, starting with the loss to the Knicks. I mentioned, you know, they were up 13 in the fourth when the starters came in. Obviously, everyone who watched this game saw the things that the Grizzlies could have done. You know, if any one of these little things kind of goes your way, you probably end up winning the game. You know, they left so many free throws out there. The Knicks made 5 of 8 three-pointers in the final little stretch. The biggest thing to me, and I'm highly attuned to it because you guys know I have a particular distrust of the Grizzlies starting lineup, and it's because they aren't actually a good offensive unit. Typically, they've had success. We all know their net rating is good throughout the season and throughout the entire games. But when, you know, things break down, they're not a great half court offense. And to be fair, there are no probably 5-man combinations on the Grizzlies that are a good half court offense when things break down, but they're also not a very good rebounding lineup. And sometimes in these close games, we've seen this happen before. We see where the Grizzlies cannot clear the defensive glass and get stops, and they've blown some leads. We had that game against the Lakers where Kyle Kuzma, if you remember, had more offensive rebounds than the Grizzlies had defensive rebounds over the fourth quarter stretch when these guys were on the court. It was basically these starters here with Ja and Grayson and Dylan and Kyle and Jonas. And I've wondered before if this Grizzlies coaching staff has decided or figured out that rebounding isn't that important in the NBA, as far as basically anyone can grab a rebound at any time, and it's more valuable just to get shooting and scoring and hope that three-pointers can overcome the problems. Well, the three-pointers didn't overcome the problems against the Knicks, and also that was a big deal in the Pacers game where the Grizzlies only made 6 three-pointers or 6 for 20 from three. But in the Knicks game, in the final, you know, half of the fourth quarter, the Grizzlies gathered 2 rebounds. Taj Gibson and Julius Randle each got an offensive rebound. So the Knicks, while they were shooting a good percentage, even when they missed, they got their own rebounds. And the Grizzlies failed to clear the glass. And that was a big part of them losing that game to the Knicks, I felt like. I think some of it was just legs and fatigue. And I kind of felt like the game was slipping away. I think maybe we all did. And maybe that's just a fan thing where you get tense, where you start seeing, all right, Desmond Bane just missed 2 free throws. That's kind of weird. We're up by 10. Let's try to hang on. But it did seem like maybe they were tired. And then it goes to overtime, and it's just the same 5-man unit again that hasn't been particularly effective this game, and the Grizzlies couldn't pull it out. I mean, some guys had good games. You know, Ja Morant had a huge offensive game, tied his career high with 4 made three-pointers. Jonas Valanciunas was a monster again, continued all his double-double streaks and all that. But when it came down to winning time, and if they were tired from the road trip and this intense season, you know, maybe more so than their opponent in this specific example, they couldn't get stops and they couldn't stop guys from penetrating. And that's a huge issue with this lineup, because Ja Morant's not a good defender. Grayson Allen cannot keep anyone in front of him. Dylan Brooks is a decent defender who does a good job a lot, but he's a bad rebounder. And Grayson Allen's a bad rebounder. And Ja Morant's not a very good rebounder. And that puts a lot of pressure on Jonas to do most of it, and for Kyle playing a power forward to get some, and they failed to get rebounds in this game. Speaking of Valanciunas, something that's a little bit painful, He missed a free throw before RJ Barrett's game-tying shot at the end of regulation. Before missing that free throw, Jonas Valanciunas had been 35 for 38 over the previous 12 games. That's 92%. That's great stuff from your 7-foot big man. Here's a real random stat. Over those 12 games, over the 12 games before the Pacers game, actually, this will still last. This will run through the Pacers game. But if you use the new game span finder on Basketball Reference, where you can look at, you know, a player who's done a specific, who's accrued specific statistics over a certain number of games, I was thinking Jonas Valanciunas' stat line over the last 12 games looks unique because of that really high free throw percentage. So I looked it up, and Jonas is the first player in the last 39 years to have a 12-game stretch where he averages over 18 points per game, 13 rebounds per game, 55%, better than 55% field goals, and over 89% from the line. I know those are some arbitrary stat cutoffs, but that's what he's been averaging, and not since Jack Sigma in 1982 has a player done this. Other more recent players who have sometimes put up stats close to this, you have your Carl Anthony Towns, your Kevin Loves, guys who are good free throw shooters who accrue a lot of rebounds. But Jonas has been killing it. Another painful thing, besides the missed Jonas free throw, was the league's last two-minute report said there were two calls that went against the Grizzlies incorrectly in the final 2 minutes and in overtime. First, there was the Julius Randle and one on Kyle Anderson that cut the lead from 6-3. It did not look like a foul. Taylor Jenkins had a tough decision whether or not to use his challenge. The basket went in, so using the challenge, if successful, was only worth taking away one free throw. Julius Randle, you know, makes 80% of his free throws, so you consider using this challenge is worth maybe 0.8 of a point. And it was Taylor Jenkins' last time out. And to me, it wasn't immediately apparent that that call would be overturned. It didn't look like a foul, but it looked like, well, there could have been some contact there. So I understood completely Taylor Jenkins not choosing to challenge there. But the last two-minute report says there was, in fact, no foul, and that would have been a free point that Taylor Jenkins could have gotten rid of. And in retrospect, it's easy to say because they lost. But so that was a missed call that benefited the Knicks. And then at the very end of overtime, this probably didn't have that much of an effect on the game. But when the Grizzlies were down 5 with 26 seconds left, Grayson Allen missed a three-pointer, and there should have been a foul called, according to the last two-minute report. So, you know, you think if Grayson knocks down all three free throws, you got a two-point game, you play the foul game, maybe you get lucky. But anyway, the Grizzlies, you know, take that bad loss, and you hoped they would bounce back against the Pacers on Sunday, but they did not. The Pacers come out on fire. At one point, they scored 12 on 12 consecutive possessions in the first quarter. They finished the first quarter, the Pacers do, with 45 points. That's the most points the Grizzlies have given up in a quarter this season. At halftime, the Pacers had 74. That's the most points the Grizzlies have given up in the first half this season. Nothing the Grizzlies was doing was working, and Caris LeVert was going off. And Caris LeVert has gone off before in the two games where the Grizzlies played the Nets early in the year when Caris LeVert was a member of the Nets. LeVert had 43 in one and 28 in the other. So he came into this game averaging 35.5 points against the Grizzlies, and he finished with 34. Absolutely absurdity. So Caris LeVert finishes this season in three games against the Grizzlies, averaging 35 points per game on 56.9% field goal shooting and 45.8% from three. Against every other team in the NBA, Caris LeVert averages 15.6 points per game, is a sub 40% field goal shooter, and a sub 30% three-point shooter. He's 39.5% on field goals this season, except for the games against the Grizzlies, and he's 29.3% on three-pointers, except when he plays the Grizzlies. So it's a little fluky, but there is at least some reason that he absolutely feasts against the Grizzlies. I think it's because the Grizzlies, one, are kind of bad at stopping penetration with the guys they had out there. Dylan Brooks is normally better than this. Dylan Brooks had an atrocious game on defense. I've only watched the game once. It felt like he was having a terrible game because he was getting cooked. Grayson Allen, I mean, he's terrible at defense. Those guys could not stop Caris LeVert from going wherever he wanted to go. And then a reason Caris LeVert cooks against the Grizzlies is whenever they set a screen for Caris LeVert, Jonas Valanciunas is dropping deep into the paint. And when you're a mid-range scorer like LeVert, the mid-range is wide open. And despite Jonas having a monstrous game, great game, absolutely kept the Grizzlies in the game with his second chance scoring. Without the second chance scoring, the Grizzlies had very little going on. I know the Grizzlies scored a lot, but Jonas was the hero for them on offense with those 12 offensive rebounds. That's the second most offensive rebounds in a game in Grizzlies franchise history. 13 offensive rebounds in a game is the franchise record. And here's a funny aside. So the record, the Grizzlies franchise record, 13 offensive rebounds, it's held by two people. One you could easily guess, Zach Randolph. It's also, someone else has this record, and I don't remember this person. This person played in the cursed 2016 year where there were 28 members of the team. Alex Stevenson had 13 offensive rebounds in a game where his personal plus minus was minus 49. The Grizzlies lost to the Rockets by basically 50. And this guy, Alex Stevenson, has a hilarious stat line. He was 5-for-17 from the field. He was 2-for-8 from the free throw line. He fouled out, had 12 points and 15 rebounds. And of those 15 rebounds, 13 of them were offensive rebounds. So Alex Stevenson, I don't remember you, even though I know I watched every game that year. But that was just a little fun aside. Jonas had 12 offensive rebounds tonight, 22 rebounds in all. But his defense, I mean, it couldn't stop Sabonis. That was mutually assured destruction, Sabonis and Valanciunas going against each other. But it also couldn't stop the penetrations in the pick and rolls and the scoring from the mid-range whenever his man would screen LeVert's man, LeVert would just settle into a really easy shot. That wasn't the only defensive problem the Grizzlies have. The Grizzlies were getting ripped apart on back cuts, on just movement. It felt like watching a ball motion, like a well-coached ball movement motion offense in high school where they're playing an undisciplined team that isn't as well prepared. But that doesn't normally happen in the NBA. It was a little sad when it happens in the NBA. The Grizzlies were just shredded by the Pacers. They eventually rallied and, you know, they gave their effort. You know, the defensive effort or execution wasn't there, but they kept going, and they cut the lead, and you got some good games. You know, John Morant was decent, I guess decent for him. You had Valanciunas keeping him close. Kyle Anderson was kind of average, and they get back into this game. The bench was pretty solid again. I mean, I'm giving full marks over the last week for Conchar and Xavier Tillman. Brandon Clark, Tyus Jones did some things. Bane, it wasn't his best game he's had, but he seemed like one of the only guys out there who was keeping guys in front of him. Dylan and Grayson were a nightmare. I mean, when Dylan gives you, I mean, was that a C-minus game, a C-minus or a D game? And then when Grayson gives you a D or D-minus game, when those guys don't give you much and D'Anthony Melton's not available, that's tough. That's hard to overcome. And it's compounded when you consider those guys are playing a lot of the minutes and not getting rebounds. And while Jonas feasted on the glass and the Grizzlies got their offensive rebounds like they do because they're a good second chance scoring team, the Grizzlies only got 26 defensive rebounds and the Pacers got 15 offensive rebounds. So that's another game where the Grizzlies are getting killed on these second chance points. Rebounding is a team activity. So, you know, you don't want to get too carried away over the individual rebounding stats. But when I'll say that, and then I'll say, but look, when Dylan Brooks has one rebound in 32 minutes, when Grayson Allen has one rebound in 22 minutes, when the other team has 15 offensive rebounds, it's one of the reasons I've always doubted this Ja Morant, Grayson Allen, Dylan Brooks lineup. And I've been trying to figure it out because the coaching staff loves it and they prefer it. And the Grizzlies have been winning. Obviously, just last week, you know, they ran off four games in a row and they'd won 8 of 11, even though that wasn't the lineup for all of those wins. But they've been winning and performing well, and they've been having these huge third quarters where everyone was making their shots. And you're like, all right, we'll just go all offense. And we don't care that, you know, our backcourt can't stop penetration and we're basically at a negative rebounding wise at almost every position on the court. And so now maybe just these two games are kind of just reverting to the mean. You know, they weren't as good as they looked in the wins against the Heat and the Sixers. And they, you know, then this is more what they are. For me, I still think it has something to do with when the pressure turns up, teams know they can attack certain things about the Grizzlies' offense. And the Grizzlies, high-paced, they want to play at a fast pace, and their preferred style of getting up and down the court and getting a lot of quick possessions and getting out in transition, that stops happening in fourth quarters. And it's harder for them to score. And the weaknesses of these lineups start exposing themselves because the game slows down when everyone is trying their hardest on the other team, and maybe they're a little more focused, there's a little more pressure. That's my theory. Some of the numbers reflect that because we do have some of these collapses. For the season, in just fourth quarters, that Grizzlies starting lineup has a negative 15.2 net rating. That's just counting fourth quarters. The three-man net rating in the fourth quarter of Ja, Grayson, and Dylan together, negative 19.3, a 125.8 defensive rating, and they only grab 45% of available rebounds. I was pleased in this game that they pulled the plug kind of early on those five guys and on the Ja, Grayson, Dylan. They closed with Desmond Bane in this game, which I thought was great. Desmond had a much better game than Grayson Allen, even though it wasn't a good shooting game for Desmond Bane. I'm confused why they don't try to play a little bit bigger, just because we know that bigger lineup, if it's Jonas with Brandon Clark and Kyle at the three and then Dylan at the two and Ja at the one, we know that's a good defensive lineup. And that lineup has played the last couple of years and had some success. It's offensively challenged. Maybe with this year's growth of Kyle Anderson as a shooter, it would be even better. I'm surprised we haven't seen that tried at all. I mean, I guess surprise is the wrong word. I've now seen 50 games of Taylor Jenkins preferring, it seems, to almost always play a little bit smaller. I think it's funny that they emphasize over and over and over they don't believe in positions. It's positionless basketball. But that only seems to be true when you're talking about a guard playing a size up. That only seems to be true if we're talking about, all right, sometimes we're going to have Grayson at the three and Dylan at the four. It certainly doesn't ever mean they're going to play Xavier Tillman, Brandon Clark, and Jonas Valanciunas at the same time. And I'm not advocating for that. But I do think I'd like to see some bigger lineups. Why haven't I seen Brandon Clark, Xavier Tillman, and Kyle Anderson on the court? That sounds fun. Why is Brandon Clark only playing 19 and 22 minutes? Is he still hurt? Is his calf still a little bit hurt? Why can't we find more playing time? If positions don't matter, why can't we get Brandon Clark averaging more like 27 minutes per game and Grayson Allen averaging, you know, closer to like 17 or 18, 19 minutes per game? I want to see Clark and Tillman play even more together. I mean, I've been into that for the past few games, and it was once again kind of a bright spot in the Pacers game. Against the Bulls on Monday, I mean, there's still no Melton. There's still no Jaren Jackson Jr. There's still no Justice Winslow. So it's going to be more of the same. The good news is the Bulls don't have a great defense. And it's the kind of game where you'd think John Morant could kind of go off. He kind of get a lot of stats. It's the kind of game where Dylan Brooks will, I think, be very excited to guard Zach LaVine. I don't think the Bulls are going to be able to stop the Grizzlies very well. I do feel a little bit concerned that the Grizzlies aren't also going to stop the Bulls. I mean, the Grizzlies' defense is supposed to be a strength, and it failed them against the Pacers. It somewhat failed them against the Knicks. That was more, I mean, I guess the rebounding part of it. But they did. They didn't have the players to match up against the Knicks. They didn't have anyone who could stop R.J. Barrett from getting to the basket. The Knicks were smart. They cleared out. They're like, Ja Morant cannot stop R.J. Barrett one-on-one. We're pretty sure of that. And that's what happened. I guess final bit of news. The Grizzlies are going to sign Tim Frazier to a 10-day contract. I don't know why. He was already on the team before. I don't feel like they need ball handling help. Does this mean Melton's not going to play for forever with his mysterious Dwight Howard fell on me, and now I've been out for over a week with no sign of return? Yeah, I'm confused. Tim Frazier's not really a prospect. I figured they would have used this 15th spot on just trying to find a guy who might be a future asset or some young guy they want to get a longer look at. You know, Tim Frazier coming on means, like, are they going to rest Ja Morant in some games coming up? Do they have planned rest for Ja Morant? That'd be my theory on why they bring in a slightly more veteran player who is a point guard. That's not an immediate position of need, you'd think, on this roster. But anyway, that is the episode for today, because the Grizzlies are back at it again on Monday night. I'm going on Locker Room. I don't know if you've ever used the Locker Room app, but on Tuesday, I'm going to go on the Locker Room app at 3 p.m. Central to talk Grizzlies, and you can log into that and ask questions. So I'm going to do that actually with Molly Morrison, aka Made in Memphis. We're going to do that at 3 p.m. on Tuesday. So if you want to talk some Grizzlies on the Locker Room app, you can do that there. Anyway, thanks for checking out this episode. Hope you have a good beginning to your week. Go Grizz.